Good evening. Welcome to the Solaria Report. Today is October 17th, 2019. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm leaving the Netherlands tomorrow for Basel, Switzerland. I'll be doing a workshop with Thomas Meyer this weekend, and then on to Chartres we go. I'll be attending the workshop, Spaces of Residence in the 72 Names of God with Ulrich. She's giving that in Chartres, and then Robert Duper is joining us, and we're going to take off for Leonardo da Vinci with Nina Hind, who is the Food for the Soul author in Paris. I'm returning to the United States, and then shortly after that, I'm going to head up by car to the West Coast. I'll be going to Portland for our event on the afternoon of Friday, November 15th. If you're out there, I hope you can join us. We still have room left. And then on to Philadelphia Christmas time. I'll be in Malvern. We have an event in Malvern outside of Philadelphia on December 20th. So I'd love to see you there. We had a great group last year. Next year, we're doing the Lake Constance Opera Hang. We sent out a video last week, and I would really encourage you to watch it, even if you can't join us. It's a great discussion by Jason and Ulrich about things we'll be discussing on the Solaria Report over the next year. And it's going to be an unbelievably great group. So I'm very much looking forward. If you have any questions, please feel free to send them to customer support or ask Catherine. Our theme tonight is celebrating excellence. My life took quite a turn when I left the establishment many, many years ago. And I wrote in the Dylan Reed story a paragraph about why I did what I did. Let me read it to you. There was a time in my life when I believed that I was part of a culture of people, call us the English-speaking people, who were excellent. The way of grief was the path through which I learned that we have not yet achieved the standard. Long ago, I made a promise that I would never act against the best interests or the excellence of my own people, that I would do my very best to ensure that we were worthy of the stewardship of our world and that we did our best to leave a better world for generations yet to come. To make and keep such a promise is to understand that money and position are tools, not goals, and that death is not the worst thing that can happen. John Berglund would probably accuse me of fighting the tape and not being good at the game. I would tell John that now is not the time in the history of our people for a failure of imagination. If you watch the Sir James Goldsmith tape, the video, his interview with Charlie Rose, where he describes what's happening with globalization, he said, this is the establishment against the rest of society. What he's talking about is people making money by destroying the excellence of their own people. Frankly, I have no interest in participating or getting rich by destroying my culture, my heritage, my tribe. It never struck me as a good idea. And now that the unipolar moment has been completely and utterly blown, it turns out that that's true. Inside of it, though, we have the red button problem, which is many, many, many of us have tolerated that destruction in exchange for short-term material comfort and safety. And now we need to find a way to turn that red button green. So now that the American military-industrial establishment, the G7, have blown the unipolar moment, the question is, what's next? And what that means is we're going into a period of great debate. So we've got to talk about what the models are we're going to use to manage the global economy, global trade, but what the models are we're going to use to manage ourselves. Now, Mr. Global wants to replace republics and democracies with technocracy. And part of that implementation is setting up a competition between the U.S. and China to see who can do the best job of implementing technocracy fastest. So for example, we see the rush of 5G because it's important. We must beat China. In the process, though, we're going to hear an incredible discussion on and on and on about the relationship between economy, law, culture. It's part of what Dr. Farrell has been talking about in the news trends and stories in the wrap-ups about the importance of nurturing culture. And it's part of getting, it's becoming very obvious, in fact, that materialism is not working well. Now, let's go back. The model we've been operating under is the central banking warfare model. The central banks print money and the military and enforcement make sure everybody takes it. Inside of that, though, has been an incredible amount of organized crime. And with the financial coup d'etat, that organized crime has synthesized with extraordinary amounts of financial fraud. Now, the success of the central banking warfare model was the high margins of military excursions, i.e. warfare and organized crime, producing very high margins, combining it with the financial liquidity which depended on the rule of law. So the winner in the global competition was the one who could take the high margins coming from narcotics trafficking, for example, and combine it with the multiples that you could achieve in the stock market and the derivatives market. So highest margins plus biggest multiples. The problem is that required a multiple personality disorder because the rule of law that you had to promote to get your financial liquidity, obviously you couldn't obey if you're engaged in, you know, transnational organized crime. So it all depended on massive amounts of secrecy. And that was possible because after World War II, we built a covert infrastructure. That covert infrastructure has exploded in size as a result of way too much secret money and secret technology, and it's basically overrun society. And what you see is it's leading to significant debasement, but it's also threatening financial liquidity. The central banks are keeping it going by pumping, but you're watching trust break down in a variety of different ways. I wrote all about this a long time ago when I really explored the narcotics trafficking. If you go back and read my Narco Dollars for Beginners and the Myth of the Rule of Law, these were concepts in the Dylan Reed story that I explored a lot about the multiple personality disorder of winning at financial liquidity and the rule of law, but also winning at the high margins of transnational organized crime. Now, why do I bring this up? William Barr, Attorney General of the United States, just made a speech on culture and law at Notre Dame Law School. And essentially what he described was an organized destruction of moral values that was essentially destroying our society. It was an extraordinary speech. I have it up on the website under Daily Salieri at the bottom of the homepage. Let me just read you a few quotes from one article. Concerted attacks on religious liberty have triggered a moral upheaval that contributes to deadly social pathologies, Attorney William Barr said Friday at the University of Notre Dame. The imperative of protecting religious freedom was not just a nod in the direction of piety, Barr said. It reflects the framers' belief that religion was indispensable to sustaining our free system of government. This is not decay, Barr said. This is organized destruction. Secularists and their allies have marshaled all the forces of mass communication, popular culture, the entertainment industry, and academia in an unremitting assault on religion and traditional values. Now, this came right after Cindy Adams, in her New York Post column, wrote the following about the new movie, The Joker, sent by a wonderful New York subscriber. Quote, "Let's discuss the filth and degradation deposited on us by the film industry. Every movie is death killing. Hollywood mouths that they are open for drugs, shout equal rights, defend women, honor minorities, applaud sexualities, and then produce the horror of The Joker. What next? A musical of the Holocaust, like a sequel to The Producers? A chorus of Jews, Hitler in the lead, Mel Gibson directing? I understand Miss Liberty allows us artistic freedom, but West Coast movie makers live behind barricaded walls, iron gates, security guards, alarm systems. Their idea of homelessness is no weekend house in Malibu. To them, tragedy means a weak box office. These left-wingers who only look to make money are thrilled with this movie's success. How dare they put out such poison?" Now, what I'm hearing echoed from Barr and from Cindy Adams is that old line from Bill Moyers, once you decide that anything goes, anything can come back to bite you. So who is William Barr? William Barr has spent many years working for the CIA. He was Attorney General under George H.W. Bush, also worked for the telecommunications industry. Now, I can't say I'm an expert in organized crime and evil, but in my personal life, whether it was the drugs coming into my neighborhood or the assassination of my mother and the suspicious death of my father or all sorts of other shenanigans or the destruction of my company, I've seen most of the evil I've seen in this world comes from the DOJ, the CIA, the telecommunications industry, and the deep state that sits behind them. So the fact that William Barr is decrying the destruction of religious values, there's kind of a multiple personality disorder here that I don't quite get. And there's no mention of the fact that he's part of an administration that has implemented FASB 56. Looks to me that was all part of the deal of him going in. We'll talk about the new proposal that the administration has on Freddie and Fannie, but it's basically, you know, as corrupting a pot of sort of financial proposals as I've ever seen, not to mention that Donald Trump Jr. just got a $50,000 speaking fee for one speech with his girlfriend at the University of Florida. It's that magic $50,000 that kept coming up next to Hunter Biden's name. Hunter got $50,000 a month in the Ukraine. Don Trump got $50,000 in one day. That's inflation. Now, what was Barr up to? A couple things. I think, first of all, it reflects a shot at what Cynthia McKinney calls the Ziocons. You really have seen, as part of the financial coup, a partnership of two groups. She calls it the Pilgrims, which is kind of the old line big money wasps, and the Ziocons, which is part of the Jewish faction, but really very much allied with the neocons. Like, it's hard to just define them as Jewish. So what we saw as soon as FASB 56 went into effect, you've got Epstein going down, Weinstein going down, now Netanyahu looks like he's going down. Now we have Jeff Zucker at CNN looks like he's going down. Ken Fisher has been targeted. He may be going down. We have the UN saying they're running out of money. It certainly looks like there's a whole lot of people that, including the Mossad or related money laundering networks, that are suddenly no longer needed. Now, it's very interesting. CNN, run by Jeff Zucker, is owned by Time Warner, which is owned by AT&T. Before Netanyahu lost, we saw Paul Singer, very big supporter of Israel, hedge fund manager, as an active investor go after AT&T. Now, AT&T is deeply tied in with NSA. Project Veritas manages to somehow drop an amazing series from a whistleblower inside of CNN and manage to pull it all off without CNN getting tipped off to this whistleblower and what's going on, which I can only say the NSA is clearly permitting all of this to happen. And very interestingly, after Project Veritas drops its third video, we get an announcement tonight. AT&T in talks to resolve Elliott Management's activist campaign. So it looks to me like the Pilgrims have decided to take FASB 56 and clean house, put the Ziocons either out of the game or back in the corner. And my expectation is we have another 5 to 10 names to fall. I think money manager Ken Fisher is probably one of them, but he's not, in the scheme of this game, he's not a big fish. So I think there are going to be lots more, and it'll be interesting to see who they are. But the speech by Barr is quite astonishing when you realize what his history and the history of his faction is. I mean, I remember reading Terry Reid's book about MENA, Arkansas, and Barr coming with Bush when he was vice president out to meet with Clinton on the drug running operation. And it's again what I say when I say, once we think that anything goes, anything can come back to bite us. You know, in those days, those operations were secret operations. You kept them secret. You know, but in the meantime, the rest of the overt economy kept embracing Judeo-Christian values. But the reality, it was only a matter of time till that burst out and infected everything. Because once you think anything goes, everybody can decide, okay, it's going to go for them too. I suspect one of the reasons that Barr did it was he wants to make sure there are plenty of law school students who believe in the system so they can support the overt side and keep it going. The Department of Justice has a big need for a lot of attorneys, and so does the court system. And it's critical, you know, for the operation of that system that they believe in the system. Then I put up two interviews of Kyle Bass interviewing two people on Real Vision TV. One was a general, Spaulding, and talking about the great threat that China poses. So this is very much into, you know, we have this big competition with China, and Kyle Bass has been really leading the way. There's a serious competition now. It was a very interesting interview. The Spalding's criticisms of China were excellent and very much worth hearing. However, there was no comprehension that many of the things and tactics that China is doing or using, you know, are ones we've been doing all around the world. And, you know, it's not based on an accurate map. It's an accurate map of sort of the many of the things China has been up to and why this competition is serious. But there's an inability to look at ourselves and an inability to discuss ourselves that can get us down to the kind of real nitty-gritty we need to get to if we're going to make serious progress. I once wrote an article about a book review of Nick Brady's biography, and I described the fact that he made it sound like his success and the success of his colleagues was based totally on just being harder working and smarting. And I called it cotton candy land because I said, you know, the problem is his kids and grandkids are going to spend their whole life working, thinking that, you know, grandfather had a success in cotton candy land, and they're going to get slaughtered by, you know, the kids who were raised by Yakuza bosses and the Japanese mob who understand how the world works. So we got to get out of cotton candy land, and we got to talk about how the real world really works, because that's where we have to live and function. We don't have time for multiple personality disorder. So it was in many respects, it was a good interview, but it's missing the kind of integrity we need if we're going to figure out sort of where the real opportunities are. Then Kyle Bass went on to interview Steve Bannon in a separate interview, and it's one of the reasons you really need to read Steve Roche's book on the rebalance. It's called Unbalance, but it's on the rebalancing of the trade with China, because you can see both sides of the story, and there are two sides to that story. Anyway, so Steve Bannon also made a lot of great and intelligent criticisms of China, but again, it's an inability to look at the full picture, because if we're going to win, you know, whether it's winning individually, winning as a people, winning in global economic competition, we have to start with reality. We can't start with nonsense. We can't start with official reality. We have to start with reality and deep, deep reality. So when I'm watching these guys talk, and they're both very smart and very interesting, you know, all I could think about was physician, heal thyself. So I'm back into playing to win, and you can't play to win if you're in cotton candy land. That's the problem with cotton candy land. I'm not looking to tear down the Western world. I'm looking to build it up. But, you know, there's no way between here and there that goes through cotton candy land. So we need to be doing more than just juicing up the competition. Anyway, I expect this kind of confusion in the debate about models and multiple personality disorder between how we are great at warfare and organized crime versus, you know, the rule of law and culture, all these debates to rage on for some time. And right now, the centralizers have a win-lose relationship with people in communities, and they're very committed to their winning side. They want to further centralize. And the pushback that we're watching is proposing that we move to either a lose-lose relationship or a win-less-lose. None of them are satisfactory. There's no real push right now for a win-win model. But, you know, you can't get to a win-win model unless you end secrecy, which is why I focus so much effort on greater transparency, why that's such an important push. You know, I'd love to have a conversation about how we get to win-win, but you can't get there. You know, a condition precedent is transparency. Anyway, what you're going to hear is a huge amount of incoherence. We're watching it now with all these different furballs. And a lot of that incoherence is purposely promoted. and it's part of what gets you to greater centralization. I just post a video on the Alice in Wonderland technique. We'll put it in the subscriber links. And it describes the value of intentionally using massive amounts of incoherence to get people to give up and just do anything to get back to coherence so they'll go along with whatever it is you want. Anyway, how do we deal with this? And I get back to what the theme is, which is, you know, getting to excellence, because the way you deal with all of this stuff, to a certain extent, you just have to ignore it and sit down and say, okay, how can I be excellent? How can I help the people around me achieve excellence? Excellence is different for each person, family, community. One of the things that's come out and people looking and talking about getting to excellence is that being excellent at something on average takes about 10,000 hours of practice, which is why it's really important if you want to be excellent, you do it at something you have a passion for. I've posted several speeches recently that I think are really inspiring to help you do that. One was last week, Denzel Washington's commencement address at Dillard University. I just posted an old favorite, Jordan Peterson, on the necessity of virtue. You can also find those in my Twitter feed if you can't, if for some reason you can't pick them up in News Trends and Story, but we'll have them in the Money and Market commentary link. Materialism is not doing it. It can't work as the basis of a culture. Our fundamental reality is not material. You know, it's not just roads, bridges, and kitchen appliances. Reality is invisible. It's consciousness. It's emotion. It's knowledge. It's energetics. And the way we create a real serious alternative to technology is by creating a very rich, high integrity, strong moral culture. And the leadership can't do that right now for a variety of reasons. Most are lost in materialism, but you know, they've had many years of the managing the multiple personality disorder and of the red button problem. And if anything, they're burnt out. So they can't do it. We have to do it. And the movie this week, which I'll talk about when we get to Let's Go to the Movies, is really designed to be just another edition of something to help inspire you. It focuses on extraordinary athletes who really have achieved excellence in their field. It's called In Search of Greatness, and it really is an exploration of different journeys of people really seeking and achieving excellence. So ignore the incoherence. Focus on excellence. I assure you, it's its own reward. Money and markets. Let's look at total returns for the year. The U.S. dollar now up 2.37%. Fixed income, the long treasury up 17%, the intermediate up 9.19%, bond aggregate up 8.16%. Wow, that's strong. And junk up 12.13%, which is unbelievable, because if you look at the rollovers next year in that market, I don't know, the world's full of much more courageous people than me when it comes to junk bonds. The Federal Reserve Bank of New York injected 104.15 billion in temporary liquidity today. That's up from approximately 75 billion. So now they're doing 75 billion in the overnight market, 30.5 billion in the 15 day. It's not a good sign that the amount is growing. That's kind of a big jump. We appear to be in a permanent state of financial methadone. Let's see what they say when they get to November 1st. Equities, the S&P now up 21%. Home builders flying at 38.91%. And I'm not surprised, because I've been reading the administration's proposals for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They're absolutely frightening. The way you bring responsibility and health to a local community is you have the local lenders make local loans for which they have risk, and you have them service it, and that's why they don't allow any funny business, no narcotics trafficking, no fraud, because if you have those things, they lose money. Once you introduce federal credit and then use the federal credit to securitize, including moving the servicing into a brokered or sort of non-local lender, what do you have? You have a complete divorce between the health of the community and the health of the local lender. So the local lender can make, you know, BOKU mortgage loans all day long, stuff it into the MBS. It's all guaranteed by the government. It's not their problem if mortgage fraud and Tony Soprano are destroying the neighborhood. And that's how we got into the mortgage mess in the first place. And it's extraordinary because if you look at where we were then, it's nothing compared to where Steve Mnuchin wants to take us. He's proposing we put conventional mortgages in Ginnie Mae, which are full faith and credit, and then extending full faith and credit to Freddie and Fannie, who will be private. So not subject to FOIA, they're going to be able to issue full faith and credit, and that's your credit. They're using your credit to do it. So they're going to have the ability to issue full faith and credit for both single family and multifamily, where a lot of the fun and games are. They're going to issue full faith and credit, and to make life fair, they're talking about giving that to other Federal Housing Finance Agency regulated lenders, which I'm sure will end up being a lot of the players who got the bailouts. So you're talking about taking the full faith and credit of the U.S. government and handing it over to a world of financial institutions who have proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that they are not trustworthy. The theory is going to be, oh, well, they'll have capital up and there'll be regulations. So this is brought to you by the same people who, you know, couldn't stop HUD from missing billions and billions of dollars, almost $1 trillion over a 20-year period. You add to that a Fed directive at the end of September that mortgages under $400,000 don't require appraisal for the MBAs you can stuff into the Fed. And now what do we have? We have the perfect mechanism to finance technocracy in the last mile, taking it into everybody's home and community. It dovetails perfectly with opportunity zones. If you look at it, also dovetails with floating Wall Street out of the portfolios they've acquired over the last 10 years as they've, you know, wrecked neighborhoods and foreclosed on millions of people. They don't have to necessarily sell those. They can float them as renters. So Wall Street's going to make out like bandits, is my bet, on what they've acquired over the last 10 or 20 years. Now, this is perfect because the millennials are now just surpassing the boomers as the largest generation. With 5G and the internet of coming things, they're going to float millennials into lots of homes and household formation, and it's going to start in time for the 2020 election. So this is how the Trump administration is going to buy every millennial. It's incredible. Anyway, this is massive steroids and debasement of our credit. The last time we turned over the ability to issue federal credit for mortgages over to private firms, it was called coinsurance. I had to clean it up. It led to massive fraud, 50% default rate and loss rates. Anyway, if there was any financial scheme designed to produce technocracy and take it into the last mile, the Internet of Things, into homes and communities, this is it. And any doubt that anyone has that Trump and his team are interested in markets or democracy is completely destroyed by this. This is designed to produce a tsunami of technocracy down to the last, you know, smart meter. And if you have any doubt about that, Don Jr.'s speaking fee for $50,000 from the University of Florida for one day. Remember, Hunter Biden got $50,000 a month. Don Jr. just picked up $50,000 a day. And what's amazing is nobody's screaming about it. I shouldn't say nobody because I'm definitely screaming about it. VGK, the European ETF, up 15.54%. The German ETF up 12.83%, developed markets minus North America up 15%, large cap China up 7.31%, the small caps up 8.14%, emerging markets up 8.45%. The things are definitely slowing. Commodities now down to 2.91%. Gold is up 15.8%, silver up 11.98%, and oil up 23.38%. California has been experiencing fires, but worse than fires is shutting off of electricity with very short notice, which is causing tremendous pain. We've even seen people die because their oxygen machines were shut off when the electricity went down. I have a generator. It comes on automatically if the electricity goes down. I was up in Cape Breton staying with a friend who didn't have a generator. The electricity went down. What a pain. And in fact, I just saw a picture they sent of their brand new generator. So make sure you're prepared to live in a world where the energy gets shut off, because it's been happening all over the country. I expect it to happen more. It's why I have a generator. So I have to be able to go 3+ days with no electricity. And I'm also getting reports of refrigerators and other appliances being turned off with no notice as a result of the smart meter. So have a plan for a world with unreliable electricity. Geopolitical furballs. We see Johnson and the EU achieve a deal. I haven't had time yet to look at the details. The question is, will the two parliaments approve? It's not a done deal. The DC swamp continues. The impeachment, we now see McConnell saying that the Senate anticipates having an impeachment trial of Trump as soon as Thanksgiving. Make the holiday season very interesting. And I think the chances of impeachment are tiny. And if there was, they were higher before Project Veritas dropped its whistleblower doo-doo bomb. That's had a big effect on chilling CNN. And unfortunately, it was certainly very well deserved. If you haven't watched it, it's up on the website and it's in my Twitter stream as well. Needless to say, what it captures is tremendous anger towards the media on all sides of the political spectrum. I think the interesting thing, if you watch the Project Veritas videos on this CNN whistleblower, seems like a really fine, high integrity guy. And, you know, the kind of person you'd love to have working at at one of your sources of news. But it's a reminder as you go through all the material just how debased the American corporate media has become. And it's, in one sense, it's not shocking because we all know it. But in the other sense, when you look at how bad it's become, you just think, how low can we go? It's like a limbo dance. Can they possibly go lower? Speaking of great media, True Streams just put out a new video. They've been demonetized by YouTube and games with Amazon, YouTube throwing their subscribers off. And so they've gone over to BitChute. And that's a big, tough move. It's one that InfoWars had to do. Other people have had to do it. We've tried to set up on BitChute and had problems with the platform, but I went to Patreon and up our monthly contribution to TrueStream, and there's somebody, if you have, I'm a tither, so I have a certain portion of our revenues and my personal income that I try and sort of spread around anyway. But if you have any money in your budget for media, I recommend supporting them to you. They're working on their next documentary on mind control, and I think that's one I would very much like to see come out. Our hero this week is a fantastic doctor. I just love this guy, Dietrich Klinghardt. And just check out he's a German who practices both in Germany and the United States. And he's done remarkable work with biophysics. And I don't even want to give it away. I think it's very important for you to discover him. There's a lot of great material. You can learn an awful lot about getting healthy and being healthy. Amazing, amazing man. Anyway, check him out. He was a student of a German named Dr. Pop, who is featured in our Blast from the Past this week. It's the Wave Genome, Ulrich Groniger's wonderful, wonderful second piece for future science. It's the quantum holography of DNA, and you'll see the fascinating footage with Dr. Pop, who was Dr. Klinghardt's teacher and sort of got him into the biophysics. There's a wonderful scene in the Wave Genome where Pop is looking at two eggs, one that's been raised or a chicken that's been raised organically and one not, and is able to document the different, literally, energy and sort of the auric field of the one egg versus the other. And what he's showing is, even though chemically the same, the biophysics are entirely different, and how much that kind of vitality matters to your food and nutrition. Anyway, it's fascinating. I thought it would be great to have the WAIF genome as the blast from the past because next week we're going to be having Ulrich's next future science on the mathematics of the genetic code. And I think it'll be really helpful background to have refreshed your, if you haven't seen the WAIF genome, it's just absolutely terrific. Let's go to the movie. As I said, our documentary this week is In Search of Greatness, and it has some great interviews with some wonderful, absolutely wonderful athletes. One is my favorite, Pele. And it also has an interview with Sir Ken Robinson, who's an educator who I think is just amazing. Anyway, if you like sports, it's really fun, too. There's a lot of sort of take you behind the scenes insights on different sports. So it's a fun documentary. And again, anything that inspires you to seek excellence, to me, is just the kind of wonderful, entertaining infusion we need right now. Our interview this week is the third quarter wrap-up equity overview. And essentially, what I said is planet equity is alive and well, but there's trouble ahead for large-cap U.S. stocks. Although Steve Mnuchin is clearly working on delivering massive steroids. As one money manager said, I'm paraphrasing, he said, never underestimate the ability of the American political class to deliver subsidy into the U.S. stock market. So, you know, that's always the challenge here. But if you review the Rambus chartology and what's been going on, I think there's significant changes ahead inside that bull market. So there's going to be a lot of turning and churning. And of course, the U.S. market has significantly outperformed, led by the large caps. And I think, you know, this signals that there may be opportunities ahead for Europe and the emerging markets to rebalance, particularly Asia. There's a great selection in the links of some of the best analysis I found over the last year. And there's a lot of really excellent commentators that can really help you see what's going on in the markets and how that fits in with what's going on in the world. Okay, ask Catherine. Hi, Catherine. I hope you're enjoying your time in Europe. I'm playing catch up with the Solaria podcasts and just finished the October 10th money in markets. I'm happy to hear that Montreal is on the short list for a summer hang next year. Anyway, I looked a little further into the campaign to lower the voting age to 8 in Canada, and it's actually a PR stunt, although there certainly may be socio-psychological effect on the population pushing the climate change up, as you say. From the 18 to 8 website funded in part by the David Suzuki Foundation. Okay, we're not actually lobbying to give 8-year-old kids the vote, but there are some things you can do right now to help us. If you're not a kid, vote like one. Our partners at the David Suzuki Foundation share our passion and vision for the future of the planet. They are asking Canadians to prioritize climate change above all other issues. But yes, lowering the voting age to 16 here in Canada can be quite dangerous as well. I agree that right now it's just a stunt, but once they get to 16, which is the goal, then they'll keep going. They'll keep going lower because their goal, first and foremost, is to get a hold of the kids directly. And so by, you know, whether it's drafting them or sort of getting control outside of parental control, they've got to take these ages down to do that. And the voting age is a very clever way to do it. Hello, Catherine. FYI from Southeast PA. I and others have noticed the leaves on the tree have been burnt and not coloring like usual in the fall. They are burnt looking and not falling off the tree. I've checked with other people in that area. They say they haven't noticed it. But I will say the pattern you're describing is what happens in a cold snap. I had one member of our team send me a long description about how that works. And I've certainly seen it in Tennessee when we get cold snaps. So one thing you might want to consider is whether it's a cold snap. Catherine, thank you for your interview with Patrick Wood, publisher of Technocracy News. Recently, I attended his Center for Free Speech one-day Phoenix Fly-In Conference, a day of actionable intelligence and rules for activists. The list of presenters, Tom DeWeese, Mary Baker, Alex Newman, Matt Shea, Patrick Wood. Matt Shea was interesting because over dinner, we discussed deep state tactics. He explained how they set traps for control using women as bait. He walked away. The control tactics are everywhere. Yep, that's true. My suggestion is publishing Patrick Wood's Citizens for Free Speech to solicit donations on the Solari site to help further his mission to train more activists. Citizens for Free Speech. Yes, we've already donated twice. When you sent this, I sent in another donation, and I think what they're doing and what Patrick is doing is great. So I really appreciate the report, and I encourage everyone else, Citizens for Free Speech, Patrick Wood's not-for-profit operation. They're hoping to put a big conference on, I think, in 2020, and we're going to do what we can to support that. Okay, then somebody sent some links on good books and good things to look, including McDonald's is talking about space travel for kids. See the attached Let's Explore Space Fun Times McDonald's booklet for kids. I told you space was going to be a big thing. Anyway, one of the things you mentioned was a new book on the history of Israel, The Trigger by David Icke. I have purchased that, but it's sitting in the pile back in the den. Hi, Catherine. In your fascinating discussion with Joseph last week, you mentioned that you sat next to two stereotypical 33-degree Masons on two airplane trips. Please describe more what a stereotypical 33-degree Mason looks like. Thanks. Okay, so there are various types, but in that context, in an LA to Dallas, Dallas to Memphis, this is typical for that area because there are different types. Anyway, they look like a prosperous businessman, someone experienced at management, could even be senior management, a college graduate, likely has a graduate degree in law, business, or engineering, is married with kids, you know, probably has a wedding band, likely a member of Episcopalian, Methodist, or Presbyterian church, so a churchgoer, very discreet, probably well-read, and is someone who would always strike people as respectable. So that's my description. Dear Catherine, this just in. I just watched a film premiere titled The Need to Grow and immediately thought this was something right up your alley. It spotlights many examples of amazing, dedicated, determined, smart, innovative people creating positive change in the world. I bought you a copy, so be sure to watch your inbox for an email from Food Revolution Network. I have that. And I really appreciate that. It was very kind of you. And I looked at the trailer, and I would just say a little bit of a beware there. It looks like they interview great people doing terrific things on food, but there's a very high presence in the trailer of butterflies, which is a covert signal that it's a mind control. It doesn't mean the people who made it know that. I'm just warning you that that's a pretty standard covert. And there's a lot of stuff about save the planet, save the planet, save the planet. And that, I consider that a very dangerous meme and one very much designed to produce technocracy. But anyway, it's clear they do have a lot of good people they're interviewing. So I look forward to seeing that. I'll make that effort. Then you sent a link for Playing for Change. I'll take a look at that. And then you talked about a really interesting idea. It'll all be in the notes. About working with groups to come up with really, really good questions that can trigger people's thoughts. I think it's a great idea. And what I would suggest, I'll think about it some more, but you might want to take a look at the comments in subscriber input on Lynn McTaggart's Group of Eight, which is a very interesting idea, and take a look at what she's been able to accomplish with small groups. And then I would just try it on a small scale with people that you would like to do something with and see how it works. And stick with subjects you can know or easily research. That's one of the reasons I do so much with the $21 trillion, because it involves everybody, it's easy to understand, and it's at the very heart of what's got to be turned if we're going to change things. Anyway, and you have the posters. We're going to have a new poster every week, so check them out. Okay, hi, Catherine. As you are able, would love to hear your thoughts about this. As you know, there's been quite a bit of deplatforming and denial of service in the banking world, refusing to take business and credit card transaction processing of firearms-related businesses, people whose speech has transgressed, SJW harpies, etc. It seems to me there's a massive market opportunity for someone with a lot of capital. I know nothing about the banking industry regulations and costs of doing business. I wonder if you could comment on possible reasons we haven't seen a conservative with a lot of capital open up a constitutionally adherent payments processing business or banking business. It's very simple. It's the same reason there are no community currencies or community data banks, even though there's huge market demand and opportunity. And that is, you know, the people with capital want to keep their capital and they want to keep their lives. This is a very controlled, you know, this is the train tracks of control, and it's essentially not permitted. You have to have the deep state franchise license. More targeting harvesting of prime real estate through California fires, writes one subscriber. Guess California now has a regular fall harvest. They are forcing ham radio operators off the air. That's very frightening. Got to make the witness shut up. And then somebody sent an interesting article from the Epoch Times. So I'll put those in the notes. Dear Catherine, about 5 years ago, I developed what best can be described as a golf ball size blister on my shoulder. Then several weeks ago, the Salary Report, you described your castor oil treatment and how you do not go to the doctor without doing that first. I've tried many times to get rid of it without success. Then I did the castor oil regime maybe 3 or 4 times a week for almost 2 weeks, and voila, several days ago, it started to finally respond to my treatments that I had tried unsuccessfully many times before. To me, this is a huge result. It virtually disappeared now. Thank you for generously sharing your knowledge and experience. And no, it's definitely not considered medical advice. The Salary world always brings so much value to my life. I'm really impressed that most people don't have the fortitude to do 3 or 4 castor oil packs for 2 weeks. And you do have to do a series usually to get them to work. You know, and it's hard when you've never tried it before and you don't know. But I don't know. I just think it's a miracle. I just can never get over what a castor oil pack can heal. Dear Catherine, sometimes I wish you were wrong. And then they sent a link about the campgrounds and the national parks being said to be privatized in a new Trump plan. I wish I was wrong too, but I'm telling you, these guys are, Trump's a real estate developer. They're going for the land. It's a huge land rush. That's what the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac proposal is about. Big, big land rush. Hi, Catherine. I've sent volume. And let me just say, part of the reason you have a big land rush is if you're bringing in a much lower energy price, either from falling prices on renewables or greater efficiency on renewables or cold fusion or any other kind of breakthrough energy, the way you make money is on the real estate. So you bring the energy price down, value of the real estate goes up. So big, big land rush. Hi, Catherine. I've sent volume one to all of my representatives. Oh, I love you. And I have a meeting scheduled with a staffer for my congressional representative to discuss volume one face-to-face in my capacity as the owner of a small RIA and tax prep firm. I believe that in the past, I heard you say you asked a representative about the missing money in a public meeting, and they said they knew about it. You said then, well, what are you going to do? And they said they couldn't do anything. You then went ahead and sent them a list of 40 things they could be doing. My question is, would you be willing to share that list or similar lists of things my elected congressional representatives can do about the 21 trainer, FASB 56? I think it might be valuable for me and others to aid our representatives in taking action. Good for you. I've mailed it to you. It's the bottom exhibit in a piece called Saving Tennessee. It's in the library, and I posted a link last week, and I'll post a link again this week. But if you just go to library and do a search for Saving Tennessee and go to the bottom of that piece, you'll find it. Just to let you know, our team has now emailed or mailed approximately 100 books to asset managers with a focus on some that are either in the fixed income markets or on Christian and ESG financing, as well as political leadership. So complimentary books so far. We've sent out about 250 books in PDF. And again, everyone here, I encourage you to, you know, print it out if you want and send the PDF. I've now put up caveat emptor. It's public on the website. So you can also send that link as well. But, you know, get this material into the hands of anybody you think can really use it and can really use it to protect their money and other people's money. Okay, another thing on the California fires. California utility company is cutting power to millions of people to avoid fires caused by seasonal high winds. Many things going on here. One way they can prevent lawsuits. They've been getting lawsuits because of the fires. You know, blaming them for starting the fires. One way they can avoid lawsuits is just cut off all the electricity. It's kind of a puppy training way of dealing with a situation. There are many other theories of what's going on, and I finally realized last week I could, you know, I could turn it into a full-time job just collecting all the different theories. But here's the reality. If the state and country had been well managed for the last 30 years, it's highly likely that this would not be happening. So I think everybody in California knows that. And again, I would just warn you that part of the way this is being done is obviously to make people feel wildly incoherent. Then someone else writes in, I'm all on board with my 21-2020. That's our campaign. We're doing a poster about the $21 trillion every week until now, between now and the election. So every week, just check out the new poster. It's on the homepage, and you can get it on my Twitter feed too. Then somebody wrote in about the Joker right when it came out. Dear Catherine, I went to see the movie The Joker last weekend, and it was horrifying. The reason for my reaction was not the media spin about the possibility of somebody showing up to shoot up the theater, but the propaganda that was pushed. The main character is a victim, abused, bullied, and neglected. He plays to all the victim Antifa lunatics, whereby they take his cue and hold up signs with kill the rich and resist. Most of the demonstrators are wearing all black clown masks, and some have pulled up black clothing covering their faces. Mind you, these signs are not handwritten or crudely made. They are bold, huge type, and appear repeatedly in the film like flashcards and a reason to loot, steal, and kill anyone who seems to be better off. I lived in Koreatown during the Rodney King riots, and the population was inundated with radio personalities telling them to stick it to the man and take back California. Many people there were on the dole, so all they needed was one matchstick to light the fire of victimhood to kill, injure, and firebomb entire neighborhoods. This film will end up killing people, and no doubt clown masks and signs that read kill the rich will start appearing on nightly newscasts, and the media will remain silent because they can't wait to cover the Civil War. Michael Moore is telling all his followers to go see this film, probably to give them a hero, and he might be surprised when one of those people turn around and look at him in a whole new way. It's interesting that this film, like the impeachment, can be viewed in two very different ways. Wish more people could hear your perspective. So I could have told you not to see The Joker. I have no intention of seeing it. I just think you have to be very, very careful before you invite the demonic into our lives. Okay, that's it for this week. Next week, Future Science Series, The Mathematics of the Genetic Code with Ulrich Groniger. It's our next Future Science Series. I'm very much looking forward to this. And then October 31st, while we're all in Paris, we have Leonardo da Vinci and The Power of Our Imagination with John Rappaport. Coming up in November, I'll be doing Take Action. We have more Deep State, and we have Saker, Jason Bowden-Smith, Amy Benjamin, Thomas Meyer. I have no idea how we're going to fit them all in, but there'll be plenty of great stuff. You'll have lots to do over Thanksgiving. So, ladies and gentlemen, until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Good night and good luck.